Hello there, and welcome to Hearth World, a 360 degrees Hearthstone podcast. I'm Gabriel, also known as Siddhartha or Sid.
And I'm Francesco, also known as Royamel or Roy.
And this is a Hearthstone podcast where we call this a 360 degrees podcast because we kind of want to cover all aspects of Hearthstone, including tournaments, news, meta, decks, card reviews, and stuff like that. And we're both come out as gamers and players mainly. So our main topic is always going to be the meta and deck reviews and stuff like that. So, Roy, why don't you talk a bit about yourself and tell us, I know you're a streamer. I mean, I watch you frequently and I quite enjoy when you stream. And tell me a bit.
Yeah, basically, I was the first Italian streamer to get a partnership from Twitch for Hearthstone. So I started back in March 2015, so it's almost now 10 months that I'm streaming and having kind of some success to some degree. I haven't played any major tournament, but because I'm more looking on the casting side of it, so about presenting and being the person behind the desk rather than behind the game. But it's kind of an interesting journey so far. So I've seen many things happening in Hearthstone. So yeah, well, just thinking about, my personal experience in January, so far I've reached Legend three times so far. So the first time in September in the EU account, then October I spent a month doing absolutely nothing, so I didn't have time to rush up to Legend. But then on December, I did a challenge to reach Legend with a free-to-play account. I first done that in November in America, in the EU and NA NA server, so with a free-to-play Mecha Druid, so using just four rares, four epics, no legendaries, no cards from the adventures, and I reached Legend rank. Yep, in NA.
Wow, that's some.
And with the same deck, I've reached Legend in EU too. So I've done three legends, of which two are free-to-play. That's kind of interesting.
Nice, congratulations.
Thank you.
I know it's quite hard. I mean,
yeah, it is.
Is it hard? I mean, once you get around rank one without all this, the cards from adventures, isn't it quite impossible almost?
No, it's not impossible. I mean, the problem is it's hard when you get to face the super controlly decks, like the real hell was the start of the season in Europe because Randall Jackson, also known as "We're Gonna Be Rich," just got released, so everyone used to play those kind of decks. And when you play mostly an aggro deck, because to play a heavy control deck, you need some sort of legendaries, or you need some ways of controlling, and some big finishers that generally are legendary cards. And when you face that 60-70% of the meta in that moment was control Reno decks, so I kind of struggled at the start. But then when closing to the season, more people start taking mid-ranges and aggro decks, then the meta kind of got an average as usual, as you should be. I then rushed in 60 games from rank 4 to legend, so that was pretty interesting. Though it's an experience that shows that you don't need legendaries, you don't need powerful cards to reach legend in Hearthstone. You just need consistency.
It's more about the player skill.
Exactly. Yeah. Not only that, because theoretically, with that 51% or even 50.01%, you can reach legend because eventually you get there.
Yeah, that's the time. Then you have to put in crazy amount of time of gameplay. I mean,
exactly. If you have, for example, if you had 100% win rate, takes you 26 games from rank 5 to legend. 26, an afternoon, right? But if you have 55-ish percent win rate, you need at least 160, 170, I guess. Something along those lines. So yeah, you can see how there's a big difference. Like 70%, it's about 80. So if you use 80, 70, depends. I'm just doing average numbers, of course, but it's along those lines.
Simple math.
So yeah, imagine that from 55 to 70, it's 100 games of difference. So like, you need to make a lot of games, play a lot of games.
So as per myself, I started the game, playing the game in beta, as I said before, and came in from WoW. I've been one-time legend player with the retarded deck, what some people call it, Secret Paladin. I actually got to rank one, and then I called a buddy of mine who kind of helped me out, who's multiple. He gets re-legend every season, and I was like, come and spectate my matches and probably give me some tips. And from like rank one, 3 stars, he helped me out with second to last and final boss, and I finally made legend, and that
Nice.
was quite nice. Yeah, and
Yes.
when you get legend, it's like you get go crazy.
I've done
And
it. I've met it.
yeah, I mean, it was kind of my objective since beta. I mean, I was always try harding a lot, and I mean, at least rank 3 and 2, I'd say 5, 6 times over the past couple of years, but Legend was quite a nice thing. I mean, it was Secret Paladin, it wasn't nothing special,
But
but
still.
yeah, it was nice. So we met each other at an event my organization made. We organized fireside gatherings. Me, Sid, and Roy as well were both part of the two biggest Italian Hearthstone organizations,
Yeah, pretty
and
much,
we
yes.
kind of wanted to meet up and see if we could make something out of our interests. So, Roy, why don't you? So, our first topic will be the meta talk. I mean, which we're going to kind of break down the meta, what we've seen in January up to today, what we think is strong, and so on. And we'll also introduce a deck. But Roy, why don't you introduce us to this month's meta and tell us what you think about it?
Well, this month meta, we're obviously basing our opinions on the Templestowe meta snapshot that needs to be taken carefully because it generally speaks about North American servers. So if you play on EU, it kind of gets kind of different. Like, it's mostly similar, but it's not exactly the same. For example, last one, the number 42, we were putting in tier 1 Aggro Shaman, and also the 40, I think the 41, put on tier 1 Aggro Shaman, to the point in which in the 40, 41st was the number 1 tier 1 deck, just the top of the line. That in Europe never happens. Like, yes, it's decent, it is a good deck, it's a new face deck, but it shouldn't be top tier 1. This week, at least this time, the number 43 put on tier 1 Zulok, Freeze Mage, Secret Paladin, and Midrange. Actually, the order was Midrange Druid, Secret Paladin, Zulok, and then Freeze Mage. And we actually agree as well with the same EU meta because the reigning deck is, of course, Secret Paladin because it's really easy to use. And if you just manage to get the right curve and the right minions and the right time, there's nothing the opponent can do to stop you. There's very little things they can do, like a perfect curve or Secret Keeper or coin mini bot into master into shredder into lothable or
It's
sludge
just
bells.
so
It's
broken. Yeah, it's just
just
so broken. Each
yeah the pro
drop is like the best in slot, so there's not much you
pretty
can do
much
about it.
yeah the
Yeah,
point is the Mysterious Challenger is actually kind of a broken card. I mean, everyone said it before, but you can say a bit more anyway. For 6 mana, you get a 6/6 that is basically almost the perfect body. That it should be a 6/7, so it's just slightly under par on defense or life, if you want to call it. But it draws generally up to 5 cards, so it's like almost a mana worth of drawing effect for each card. So it's almost 5 mana. And then plays them. So he plays 5 1 mana cards. So it's basically almost 16 mana worth of value. Like something's less
Yeah,
even, even
it's also
15 mana value.
it's thinning your deck. You're gonna hit Dr. Broom earlier. You're gonna
Exactly.
hit Tyrion earlier. Once you take 6 cards out of your deck, I think the strength of the Secret Paladin is not only the Mysterious Challenger itself, but
It's
it's
the whole
the
synergy,
mana
right?
curve from 1 to 6. So each drop is just like the best in slot,
Pretty
except for
much, yeah.
Secret Keeper, which is a one drop. But starting from 2 with Shielded Mini Bot and Muster for Battle, Piloted Shredder, Lotheb, or Quartermaster, whatever. It's just like there's not much you can do to combat that. As long, I mean, you can not even a priest. I mean, not many board clears. It's Brazilian.
It's complicated. It's of course complicated. It's not how to lose, but it's quite complicated. Yeah, of course. It's not the best.
As resilient as the Death Rider Rogue. That really doesn't get off the board, but it's still like quite hard to clear out and gain tempo advantage. So why don't we jump in the deck of the week and let's talk about basically the new iteration of Grim Patron.
Exactly. So
the difference between the old Grim Patron and the modern Grim Patron is that the modern Grim Patron is more of a mid-rangey deck where you're not going to look for the combo finisher because of the obvious Grim Patron nerf, which doesn't have not the Grim Patron nerf, sorry, the
Warsong,
Warsong Commander, the nerf Grim Patron. And the new iteration is more of a mid-rangey deck as it plays Dr. Boom, it plays Gromish, and and we were actually looking at a list from last season. Am I right? Is it a season 21 list?
It's season 21. It's also used in 22nd. Basically, is the list that runs the moment. The one at least is the one that I prefer. That runs Shredder instead of Corcoran Elites. There is two versions. You can play on more aggressive version and a more controlly board oriented version that. The more defensive one uses the Shredders, the more aggressive one uses the Corcoran Elite. It's 4 mana, it's 4 damage, it's a little Gromash if you get my drift. If you can use it as a 4 extra damage to get to lethal. Sometimes, now and then, not always, but sometimes you're going to use Gromash as a 4-9 with charge just to deal 4 more damage. And that's a little Gromash. It can be used as a removal because it's 4 damage for 4. And sometimes in some decks, when you have a 4/3 on the field, you have to remove it. So it's also a passive removal because you smack it in the face and they're forced to trade it. You can't leave a 4/3 on the field indefinitely. So it's really good against Priest because the 4 attack is the magic number. So it's not lower 3 or lower from Shadow of Pain. It's not 5 or higher.
The two removal spells.
Annoying, yes, exactly. And so I personally prefer the version with Pattern Shredder that also helps you with the board control. That is the aim of the new pattern. The fact of not combing you anymore to death in OTK, but getting the control of the board via the spawning of patterns.
So do you want to? Sorry, I interrupted you. Do you want to read out the list, or you want to should we just give a link?
We can just give a link in the description. So we can. It's basically. We'll give you a quick rundown of the list actually. So for the one we are using to showcase this deck, that runs the classic Jim in the Rage. It's running the classic 2 in the Rage, 2 Execute, 2 Whirlwind, 2 Fiery War Axe or Fiery Wind Axe actually, 2 Battle Rage, 2 Slam, 2 Armorsmith, 1 Fierce Monkey actually. There is an interesting addition that I will talk about it later. 1 Froth and Berserker that generally gets played tempo, so just put on the board, kill it, or next turn I'm going to use a Whirlwind effect or something to make it really big and kill you with it. 2 Deathbite, Gromash. 1 Sir Finley Murgleton, of course, the new legendary from League of Explorer. When I told you, you were like, what? Sir Finley in the butter? Really? But
yeah, I was like,
exactly. I'll give you in detail more later as soon as I finish. We will talk about it. The unstable goal, 2 Acolyte of Pain, 2 Dreaded Corsair, 2 Potter Shredder, 2 Grim Patron, and Dr. Boom or Dr. 7. It's kind of a classic old pattern list, but of course without the Warsong, with some changes.
I see several variations.
Exactly.
Yeah, I see several variations in here. Personally, I only played... I mean, I haven't played this new list. As I told you, as I said before to Roy, I didn't play this list. I was playing Malirogue, but I know this new patron is coming back quite strong, also in tournaments as well.
Yep.
And I see the Sir Finley Murgleton edition. And I put in 300 games with the old patron, which was totally broken. It was combo based, and you were just drawing and looking for cards.
Survive till like an OTK.
The Jetson rule used to. Yeah, it was just survive. But It looks like more of a tempo play. It plays one Fierce Monkey and one Frothing Berserker. The Frothing Berserker feels more like of a bait because, it's only four
Exactly.
health, so it's easily removable. So it's a bait for tempo, what I thought. It's also a tempo addition because of its town. So you
Yeah,
get a sort of
not only
a
that,
initiative.
because not only that, because it's a 2/4, right? So it's easy to remove, but it's not super easy. It's not a 1/1 or a 2. It's 4 health, starts being the mid-range, the safe health. Like, more than 4 is good. Like, 5 health or higher is really nice. 4 is the right in between, right? And the point is, if you can't remove it, it's really dangerous, because especially if you have for example, imagine you're playing first
Whirlwinds in
against,
hands, yeah.
exactly. Imagine you're playing as a first player with a patron against a secret paladin. They have Minibot down, and you answer to Minibot with your Frothing Berserker, and you're like, now do you really want to use Master for Battle without killing my Frothing Berserker? You really want to do it? Because if I have a Whirlwind and I use it, I'm gonna clear your board and then smack your face for a billion, and then you'll be like, okay. So it's
So
interesting
actually,
as a
you know
player,
what?
yeah.
I was game playing against the new Grim Patron Rogue, and like I left him by mistake. I mean, not by mistake, intentionally. His Frothing Berserker only died on the board, nothing else. It was around, I think, turn 8, and I had board control. And I said, I thought, listen, there's no way he's gonna. I don't remember the HP, what HP I had, but there was no way he's gonna take the board back. So he had one solo Frothing Berserker on turn 8. His turn, he drops, boom, and he has one charge on his Death Bite, and he plays a Whirlwind. So basically, he made the two boom bombs
Boom
explode,
bots explode,
plus all the
getting
Frothing
damage.
Berserker charges, plus the Death Bite. It was like almost like, I don't know, something around like 20 damage or something. Not 20, but I had my minion that were charging his Frothing Berserker as well when they got damaged. So it was like almost an OTK. Not quite an OTK, but like I was dead. I didn't have 30 HP, but like I was dead and I was shocked. I mean, I didn't think that Grim Patron was still viable as it is now.
It
I mean,
is,
I
that's
was
the
quite
point.
surprised.
And that's also why it's a quite common deck in the tournaments, because everyone in the tournaments generally plays Druid. Druid still has troubles against patrons, because if you get the dream combo that is turn 4 Death Bite, turn 5 patron within the rage, and then the second charge of the Death Bite, 9 out of 10, the Druid will look at the board and like, yep, I am never going to get that back, ever, ever, at all. So you know what? Let's go to the next one. And because Druid has, it's really popular in, I think it was the, not the DreamHack, I don't remember which all tournaments now on the top of my head, but out of 16 players, that wasn't of course the Blitzcon, but out of 16 players, about like 15 had Druids in the deck lists. So
I heard about.
everyone had
I
it.
remember that.
And the
Yeah, I
BlizzCon,
remember.
only two players. There was Oskaka, and I guess was Thais as well. Thais and Oskaka didn't have the Druid in their lineups, so everyone else had it. So something along those lines. So Druid is a really common deck choice in the tournaments scene. And that's why Patron is still really
It's
good.
the Druid has been stable in tournament meta since meta,
Ever.
basically. I mean,
Yep.
it's a I mean, I'm not a big Druid player, but when I go to the tournament, I always bring Freeze and Druid. The third deck is usually Hunter or I don't know, whatever, or it used to be Grim Patron. It depends on how I feel and what the meta looks like. But those are two staples, like Freeze Mage and Druid are two tournament meta stables, staples, as you said.
Yeah, also
And
because, as we were saying before, sorry if I interrupt you, but as we were saying before, Freeze Mage still has the same list as ever. Pretty much nothing really changed. Like, even the pro players like Thais, that is the world champion, the current world champion, he said that he tried the Torch from League of Explorers in the deck and said, well, I like the Torch, the fact that I spend mana more now to not spending later. But I put another card in my deck that, yes, is good, but is also bad, because I'd like to draw things that I put in my deck. So I'd like to draw Doomsayer, Frost Nova, Flamestrike, Antonidas. if I draw the card, the Roaring Torch instead of Antonidas, I'd be really angry because I need Antonidas, and the Roaring Torch is good, but I'd rather get the just normal fireball, discount it, or use it as a removal, and who cares?
I think the Torch is a good card for the Reno Freeze variation,
exactly,
as it takes out consistencies and puts in more one-off cards.
Yeah, exactly.
But going back to the patron, I see this Sir Fernley Murgleton. As I said before, I haven't played this new list, but I have put in many games with the old list. Can you tell me how this Sir Fernley Murgleton is kind of helping out this
deck? How does
deck?
It fit?
I mean, I understand you don't want to armor up, but what are you actually looking for?
Well, what the thing is, for example, depends on the matchup, because the queen or the king example, did you want to say, it's versus mage. Versus mage, you should hold that on the Sir Fernley Murgleton, because if it's a freeze mage, just click on ear power and you're going to win 80% of your games, okay? But any against anything else, the power you're looking the most is the mage, because you always have a way to spawn more patterns. Because against non-freeze decks, the armor up don't really care about it, because you don't need to survive, because you don't need to anymore to wait for the combo.
It's more of a tempo base rather than you're not waiting for the combo, as you said. So you can kind of put stuff on the board and not worry about your personal HP.
So exactly, and the point is as well, like the top three powers you want to get, the top one will be the mage, or of course to even proc the acolyte to draw more, to proc your minions to use battle rage, to proc the frosting berserker, the activation, or maybe all the minions to as a remove. There's a million ways you can use the magic power. The second best would be the priest, because you can trade the patron in and then heal it back up, so that he can have a bigger and safer board. Of course, like if someone's gonna play a light bomb, whatever, you still die. But in from the normal control means like minions, small removals and whatnot, having always full health minions or patrons is actually pretty good. And the third best would be the sorcerer, the warlock, so that you can draw cards. So you can sacrifice your own HP to draw cards and be more able to control the board and spawn patterns, do things and stuff. So,
So you're currently running this deck, right? Do you have your statistic on the deck tracker? Can you tell me more or less where you're at?
None at the moment.
Okay.
Because
No problem. Yeah. You previously said once you get the dream turn on turn four, you put down Death Bite, and then five, you Grim Patron and Inner Rage. Other than Priest and Mage who have removal, all other decks are kind of, they either insta concede or, I mean, they're going to try and fight for the board, but they're not going to come up. So, like, Warlock is not going to hold up against this. And,
The best matchups for this deck are actually Freeze Mage is not the best, but it's doable, definitely doable. It's not, because Control Warrior is auto win. Control Warrior versus Freeze Mage, it's like 90-10. It's almost undoable. Okay.
This
pattern,
is a bit less.
Yeah. Pattern is pretty much like 60%, 70%. Because it depends how the player, depends how you play, but it's still on top of them. The point is, it's really good against the druid, any iteration of druids, because if you can manage to get the board control, like a heavy board control, druid has no tools in the class itself. Doesn't matter the build, doesn't have the ways to keep your board clear, so it's going to eventually lose unless you run out of health too quickly and it can burst.
But how about against Paladin? I mean, I think all those 1/1s would are great fuel for
exactly. Yeah. Secret Paladin also is kind of a decent matchup. It's not as good as you think for the 1/1s, because they have the amazing minions, they have removals, they have the True Silver, they have Coghammer, all the shenanigans and secrets and stuff. So it's complicated, but your matchup should be higher on the Secret Paladin, and also Zoo, because Zoo, they have lots of minions, lots of stupid little minions. So it's not as good as before, because before they couldn't play anything because you'd use the Warsong to kill their
boards. They were
afraid,
No,
you simply
couldn't. They didn't want to give in too much.
Exactly. But before you simply couldn't, because they could get rid of all your board in one turn and you'll give them a board. So now it's better for them, because you have a limited amount of attacks. So you can remove one, two, three pieces in a turn, but that's it. if I have a full board of stuff, I can still try to overrun you anyway, but it's mm-hmm. better than before. But you still, of course, is in an advantageous position. And Tempo Mage, because unless they have perfect removals and perfect tempo, they're gonna lose, because they can't remove the whole board multiple times. Sometimes they don't even play Flame Strike in the main deck, so they resort to get them from Eternal Conjurer. And if they don't have Flame Strike, and yes, please use a Flame Waker to shoot random pings. Please do it. Thank you.
Yeah, that I mean, I'm sure that once the Flame Waker ticks off, and you're just going to spawn more patrons. But it looks to me like everything else looks like the old list,
except for
Boom, which is the Boom and Grom. Mm-hmm. I mean, Grom used to be played in the first patron iteration, but then it was taken out because everybody realized that reaching the combo earlier gives you a higher win rate. So Grom, yes, it's a great card. It's like a 4/9 with charge, or a 10, it's a finisher, a great finisher. But if you're able, I'm talking about the past. If you were able to hit the combo before even play Gromish, you would close out. So it was removed. But now, since the combo has been taken out, it's been put back in, and it's a great card. And as for Dr. Boom, is a great tempo card. I mean, there's nothing like Dr. Boom. And other two changes are Fierce Monkey for one Frostbite and one Berserker. Frogging Berserker, mm-hmm. And one Furly Murgleton for one goal.
Yeah, the thing Boom, for example, took the place of Tarisan or Tarisian, depends mm-hmm. How you want to spell it, how you pronounce it. And because we don't need it's not a combo deck, we don't need discounts, we don't care about them. Yes, nice, it's cool, but I'd rather have Boom. If I need to choose between Grommash, Elscream, Dr. Boom, or Tarisan, I'm not a combo deck. I don't need the discounts anymore. Who cares? So it's a totally different take on the pattern.
On the mulligan phase, mm-hmm. we're going to look out for Fire War X.
Of course, as usual.
Armorsmiths, Unstable Goals, Alkali. Mm-hmm. Any low drops is fine. There's not really... and you don't want to kind of have... You want to throw back Grim Patron, any Boom, or obviously you don't want to keep Boom or Grommash or whatever.
Yeah.
Would you say that you'd keep a Death Bite? I mean, yeah. I mean, if...
Yeah, depends on the matchup as well.
On turn five...
Depends on the matchup as well. You should always try to get to the Firework Axe, because if you have the Firework Axe and Death Bite, you'll remove the Death Bite, unless you have already the patrons or the Inner Rage. Like, and depends on the matchup as well. If you know or you think you're gonna get against you are playing against an aggro class or a non-control mid-range class, you have to throw the second weapon away. But if you know you're playing against a controlled deck, like a priest or a druid that takes his time to start the game, and especially against the druid, you should always keep Deathbite, Inner Rage, and Pattern, because if you manage to do the three-card combo before turn 4, so turn 4 you play Deathbite, turn 5 is Pattern, Inner Rage, second charge of Deathbite, and druid is lost. Druid is just like, yep, done. Nothing to do here. Next game.
Yeah. As I said earlier, I haven't been playing much of this list, but I'm sure you have much more insight than me. So, yeah, Mulligan, you want the weapons. If you have the
Hurly Ball control, yep.
Yeah, obviously you have to check out your matchup. I mean, something you should always do and kind of figure out as soon as possible what deck you're playing against. And, are we fine to move into the card of the week section?
Yes, of course. That is the one card that is featured in the deck itself. Sir Philly Murgleton. Now they got everyone.
It's a new,
everyone's
new edition from LOE.
Yeah, from League of Explorers.
New edition
exactly.
from LOE. I think it's the third wing,
It's the third wing.
It's been viable in a couple of decks. The aggro shaman.
I'd say more than a couple.
For the hunter hero power.
I've seen it put in anything. Anything. Everything. The only thing I haven't seen it put in is the freeze mage. He's a control warrior. I've seen people putting in the mid-range hunter. Mid-range hunter. Patrons. Yeah, everything.
Honestly, I feel like playing it more in the decks that they need it rather than most decks. And... It's a very good card for decks that, I mean, as I said before, for decks that need it, like Aggro Shaman and mid-range Paladin and mid-range Hunter. I haven't seen it personally.
Yeah, I've seen
I've played
some people
it
running
in
it.
egg. I played it in an Egg Druid, and I've played it in that's it. Actually, I've played it in just two decks: Egg Druid and Aggro Shaman. But this card, this is a one mana cost card with a one attack and three defense. It's a Murloc, and it reads out Battle Cry, discover a new basic hero power. Discover is a new mechanic that was introduced in LoE, and this certainly from Sir Finley Murgleton has a unique discover, as in it's discovering hero powers rather than cards. And what do you think about this new discover mechanic, Roy? And is it good? Is it bad? Is it good where it's needed, or is it not needed? Tell me.
In my opinion, it's a really good mechanic because you're trying to mix the RNG with the player choice. Like, people nowadays are kind of tired of the skills portal, like the unstable portal in which you play this card that costs two for the mage and creates in your hand a card, a minion card that costs three less, a random minion card, any card that costs three less. So I've seen like Deathwing played for 7 mana. I've seen Jaraxxus play for 6 mana or Antonidas for 4 mana and the point is that you will lose some games from some people playing Unstable Portal, summoning from Antonidas that costs 4. A 5/7 that costs 4 that summons it gives you a fireball when you play a magic spell. That's pretty good, right? So it's just a total RNG. While Discover, sorry, actually gives you 3 choices. So it's yes, three random cards, but the only cards from your class. So there's no more Jaraxxus stuff coming out of the mage spell or whatever. So you can only get cards that you could normally get. So there's no more wombo combo happening, and there are three of them. So you'll get three spells, basic hero power or whatever. The only exception is of course Murgleton, because they'll give you not your hero power, like three new random hero power, the choice between the three of them. And I think it's really good because it mixes the randomness with the player choice. So it's kind of a compromise between random fist and skill. So it's kind of an in-between. So in my opinion, it's a really good mechanic. They're aiming to the right direction with the development in Blizzard. So what do you think about it?
Yeah, I think. Well, as I said before, haven't played this in all decks. I haven't played Sir Finley in all decks. I've only played it in the decks that it's needed. And yeah, it's a fun. The mechanic in itself, it's quite nice because it has that RNG flavor that Hearthstone and Blizzard love. But at the same time, it gives you a skill-based action.
Choice,
So you're going to choose one out of three hero powers or cards, depending on what discover you're using and what kind of discover you're using. And it's really a situational move, as in you're going to analyze the board state, your HP, his HP, minions, card
Exactly.
advantage, and whatsoever. And then you're going to choose upon what the best card is. So like you have to really be kind of a good arena drafter, you know? Like so
Similar, yeah,
it's
kind
just
of
like
a.
it's kind of like an arena draft. So you gotta really, I mean, you know, if the opponent is at 6 life and you get the choice of a fireball, you're gonna pick that. But there's other situation where all cards are bad and you just gotta make the best out of it. And
Exactly.
yeah, so it kind of fulfills the necessity of the competitive scene to input that
To be
skill-based
skill-based, exactly.
feeling. But it also has, as I said before, the RNG, which Blizzard really loves. And it kind of this thing about RNG, a lot of people have been complaining about it, as it takes out skill from the game. So, you know, how entire tournaments are based upon Pilot to Traitors, like what's go if a Druden Slayer comes out, then
or even
a the guy
portal,
loses a tournament and he loses, I don't know, $20,000 or something like that. But this kind of mechanic is, I think, was a quite smart of a move. Rather,
it's a good compromise,
if you look
yeah.
back, you know, yeah, if you look back, you have Battlecry and Death Rattle, which were introduced in vanilla in beta. Mm-hmm. Then you had the addition of Joust, and what was the other one? It was
Inspire.
Joust Inspire. And Inspire. Yep. So Joust, I think competitively it's unplayable except for like a very few cards.
Yeah,
you know that 3-2 beast in the Hunter.
Yeah,
mid range Hunter. I forget the name. Let me go. It's it discovers a card from each player's deck, and whoever has the higher cost mana.
Yeah, but that's Valkyrie. It's not an Inspire. The Inspire mechanic, the one that gives you the
it's a joust.
Power. It's a joust. Ah, yeah. You're talking about the Inspire. Yeah,
isn't it joust?
Also,
It's a joust, and also
King's
Inspire.
Elec, the name.
Yeah, King's Elec. Yeah, Inspire also. It's okay. It's decent. I mean, I only play Inspire with Nexus Champion Sarag.
Exactly.
My control,
that's the only
warrior,
one, yeah.
Because that's the only viable place I'd see this mechanic. I mean, mm-hmm. also the priest plays Paltrus, and which is, you have to know that Inspire is a play that you rather make 2 turns after the card is playable. So you want to kind of gain immediate value out of the card you're playing with Inspire. So you're going to drop the card. For example, Paltrus at 7. It's a 7 drop, but it's not a 7 drop. It's a 9 drop.
Yeah, like the Murloc Knight, the other famous playable Inspire.
Yeah, so
you generally want to play a 6 mana, yeah.
Yeah, so these two mechanics haven't really stuck. Rather than Discovery, as we were going back, Discovery is decent. I mean, it was a smart move from Blizzard.
Yeah, I agree.
To satisfy all tastes. So, if we want to talk about the meta a little bit more, or we want to go on?
No, it's basically really the meta. In my opinion, the current meta in the EU server is actually much better than the last month, because you seen last month everyone were using the Reno decks, control decks. So about 60%, like 64%, I guess. 64% all along those lines. Of the decks I found in my free-to-play to legend climbing to in EU, like 64% was control decks. Control or Reno decks. Like either control warrior or at least control warrior with Reno and all the possible retarded stuff, more mixed stuff and whatever. And that made a hell, because every game lasted forever. And I understand when there is 70% or 60% of aggro, it's bad as well, because you don't get to enjoy the game and etc. It should be an average. But while before, many people used to have control Reno decks because it was a new flavor of the month, now everyone went back to kind of aggressive-ish. Like, yeah, it's more like, well, all right, you know, we had fun with Reno. Let's play normal decks now. So you see coming back Zoo, that was... Then in the Templestorm meta tier list, Zoo was like a tier 4 or something. It was like, yeah, you can never ever play this kind of deck again. And the old archetypes that are coming back, seeing Midrange Hunter, Face Hunter. I've seen Handlock.
Reno was just...
Recently came out of
Reno
Handlock.
You've seen a Handlock?
Yep.
Really?
Yep. Like,
well,
2 days
sure
ago.
I was playing Bran.
Yes, but it was it wasn't a Reno Handlock. It was a normal Handlock with Bran. And what else was it? I just seen it like an hour ago or something, at least on Hearthbound, and it was pretty funny, because like I thought the Handlock was dead.
I played quite a bit of Reno and Reno Warlock, but I felt a bit like everybody started learning how to play around it, and it wasn't really quite viable anymore. And the heals aren't really important in this game. I mean tempo and card advantage is what is important. Heals, I mean, healing yourself, it's kind of a tempo loss itself, because, I mean, yeah, sure, you're putting, I mean, Reno is a great card, but look at cards like a Healbot or the paladin card, the lay on hands. I mean, yes, you're drawing, you're healing yourself, but you're not doing anything. I mean, you're drop. For example, you're gonna drop Reno. Okay, you go back to 30 HP. But if your opponent has the board control, there's not much you can do if you don't have immediate removal. If you don't have board control yourself, heals are useless.
But that's why it's really good in hand look, because you generally you're low on health, but because you use you. Invested, you spend that health to draw cards and play cards that requires you to have low health. And then when you use Reno, after you already have a board, you just use Reno to recover from a possible burst to who's going to kill you. After that, you're good to go. And in the handlock I've seen, maybe we talk about it next week, of course, Brand was used and was advised to use with either Farseer, Altering Farseer. It's for 6 mana, 6 health, a 3-3 and a 2-4, so it's decent. But the best was, of course, with Ilbot for 8 mana, 16 health, a 3-3 and a 2-4, so it's kind of good.
Defender of Argus.
But recovering health, because we don't have Reno in the normal handlock, because he was playing 2 Mountain Giants, 2 Mountain Giant. It's a non-common handlock, pretty much. But instead of using the Demon Pie, also use Draxus as well.
So, just before we go into our next topic, which will be Brawl, I personally want to say that, as my personal experience, what I really saw strong on the ladder this month was, personally, I think Secret Palette top and Freeze Mage on second place and Zoo on third place. And then this is my personal and what I saw in the game time. I play around 3-4 hours a day. I mean, I know you play double because you stream. But that's what my kind of meta snapshot would be in EU at this moment now. I've been playing a bit of Mali Rogue as it's kind of rising again, but still there's not much you can do against decks like Secret Pala. It's still top. It's still dominating the meta.
Yeah.
So Brawl this week. This week Brawl was Return of the Mechazod. So this is a new iteration of an old brawl.
Yep.
This brawl originally was this brawl was originally introduced as the first co-op brawl, as in cooperative brawl, where both players are killing off a single
boss,
minion. Yeah. And the first situation was presented with Priest and Paladin, where the mechanics were Priest was keeping both players alive and Paladin was flooding the board and trying to kill off Mechazod. On this most recent iteration, you have Druid and
Mage.
I forget Druid
Mage.
And
Druid and Mage.
Druid and Mage, where Druid is kind of it's sort of the same thing like before. Druid is kind of healing both players.
Yeah, both of them have healing
and
things and
pulling
stuff.
Out tokens. Yeah, tokens. Tokens were strong. And were mages just burning. So what you want to try and do is, in consequence, play Lore Walker Cho on one side and Milhouse Mana Storm on the other side.
Yeah.
So you can get full value and bring Mechazod down to 0. I don't know how much HP does he start off.
95.
I forget. Was
95.
It 95?
Yep.
95. Yes, 95. And this kind of brawl is, I feel like it's of a sandbox for Blizzard to test out new mechanics and stuff like that.
But, yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
But that's more of a general knowledge for everybody there. I mean, everybody already knows. Anything you want to say about this week's brawl?
Yeah, I kind of like it better than the other ones. The problem is what it should do. What in my opinion, it's cool. It's a cool idea to co-op and do the same. But what it should really do, for example, to make our life much easier is to actually show the cards of the opponent, because we need to play with them. If we play with our friends, of course we can speak with them, because they look maybe next to each other and be like, look, I have this, look, this in my hand, look, what we can do. Because Arson lack communication, because we can't interact with the player, with our opponent, we can only say hello, greetings, whatever. We can't look, play this, look, do that, look for this card now. And if I could see the card of my opponent, or in this case of my ally, I could just try to guess what the best move will be. Because for example, if I'm a druid and I have Mana Storm in my hand, and I see that my opponent has Lore Walker Cho, so it's like, look, I'm just gonna play now Mana Storm so that he will realize that, look, but if I now play Lord World Control and I play spell, I give all my free spells to him. I use them on Megazord and then I give them to him. So at least you can kind of guesstimate what to do. But if I can see the cards and I can speak with them, it's just a blindfolded game. But it was a much, much better. They were much better decks and a much better try than last time.
Okay. So just want to, since this being the first episode, I would also like to do a little pinpoint on Last Brawl, which Last Brawl was quite particular, new and innovating brawl, where there was a, what I don't remember what it was called precisely. But the mechanic of the brawl, was at the beginning of the game, each player would choose a buff, an aura, yeah, or whatever, and these buffs were either +1/+1 to battle cry minions, +1/+1 to death rattle minions, summon a 1/1 Murloc token at the end of your turn, and gain 3 armor every one time you throw a spell, yeah, you cast a spell. So I wanted mm-hmm. to go back to this brawl, because what I've heard is that Blizzard was testing out auras, so persistent effects throughout the game. So this could be a new mechanic they're just trying out or want to input in the in the game itself. Or what do you think about it? Was it something that you would see as a good thing to add to Hearthstone, or is it something that it's kind of stealing off Yu-Gi-Oh or something like that?
I don't know personally about Yu-Gi-Oh.
Is it viable for you?
Yeah, there were back in Magic the Gathering ages ago, there were this kind of enchant word. So they're basically permanent effects that apply to you and all your opponents as well, I think, in the case of Magic the Gathering. But in this case, I think it would be a decent addition to the game. It will have another layer of gameplay. Imagine that you build your deck either by choosing them before, like having the 31st card of the game, like the number 31, so there'll be one aura that you can say, mm-hmm. when I play this deck from the start of the turn, I'm gonna show this card to my opponents and look, all my Murlocs will have +1/+1, whatever, or I'll summon a Murloc, one Murloc every turn, or I can kill one of your minions every turn, or anything, you know, something, and there will be or a card. So once you play this card, like a legendary spell, costs 5 mana, and from now on, this effect applies to the battlefield or to your side or whatever. So I'm really curious to see what they can come up with.
Yeah. So going on with the news, because we mm-hmm. want to cover all sides, all point of views about Hearthstone. Ben Brode came out a couple days ago with a video, which was the video about releases or something like that. It was a mm-hmm. developer insight. And did you watch the video, Roy?
Yeah, of course, I've seen it.
So basically, Ben Brode was kind of telling everybody out there that if there's a low time period where no news is coming, no cards are being released, what they're saying is that they're actually working on something. So that we almost always know. I mean, we expect, and from Blizzard, always the best. And what Ben Brode was communicating to us is that if you don't hear anything from them, it's a good sign, as in they're working
busy.
Something behind the scenes. So, for example, he gave an example himself where he said they were working on Tavern Brawl before the game even released. So, Tavern Brawl was released, I don't know, maybe 3-4 months ago?
Before the Grand Tournament. So, before July? I think it was August or something like that?
Yeah, and the game has been out for a couple of years.
Yeah.
This means they've been working on Tavern Brawl at least a couple of years. And he was telling us how they're trying to refine the product they want to give out, because mm-hmm. Consumers have the highest of expectation from Blizzard. So they have been saying they're working on deck slots for quite a while now. I think something around like 3 months. I think was it in November at BlizzCon they announced that something
we're working
was
on
said.
It. Yeah.
People were already saying, yeah. And that just shows how Blizzard is meticulous and how much they iterate a product or something to actually game before releasing it. And I mean, I thought it was nice, but it sort of felt like an empty video. If you look back at the past videos, there's gameplay stuff that has been discussed, like consistency and nerfs, and what was the other video was I forget.
There was
I don't remember. Anyways,
I
it
remember
was
all of
more.
them.
What was it?
I remember all of them as well. One was about
Anyways,
the
it was
nerf and
more
whatnot.
technical. What do you think about it?
Well, the problem is, in my opinion, the video, yeah, was about the Ben Broad felt like the Captain Obvious. But the point is, many people needed to hear what is a common sense. Like, they can't always communicate, because if they're preparing a surprise, if they're getting ready to reveal something amazing, they can't tell you 2 months in advance, "Well, look, in 2 months we're going to release a new content." Because after 2 months, when they're going to re "Oh, look, there'll be new content coming out," they'll be, "Yeah, we know this already, who cares, whatever, move on." So even if you play, if they're planning on nerfing something, for example, they already give you the hint of they're looking at the combo, the Druid combo, the Savage Roar, Force of Nature combo, and they're looking at the Mysterious Challenger. So it means they're working on it. They're evaluating how to nerf it or change it or whatever. So if they tell you, for example, in, I don't know, halfway through December, they'll tell you, "Look, we know we're gonna nerf the Druid combo. We're gonna smash it, destroy it. We're thinking of having the combo cost 13 mana that you need 2 turns of Tharisan to work it." Example, right? People will already start taking measures. So the people already stop playing that card. People will already start changing the meta. Some people will already start complaining. Some people will start cheering. So that's it. And maybe they will change. And maybe, because it's still early in development, they will say, "Look, you know what? Instead of 13, we change our mind, and then we'll do 10 instead." So until they know as a fact for sure what they're going to do with a problem, with an issue, they can't tell you, "Look, we're evaluating A, B, C, D, E, 6, blah, 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 blah." They'll tell you, "Look, we're looking on it. Just be patient. Don't worry about it, and we'll get there. But just be patient. Stay here. Relax." People, of course, when they have like a month, 2 months of whole of nothing happening, you're like, "Man, you like went away with the money." So people, just relax. Everything's gonna be all right. No one is running anywhere, so just enjoy, relax and enjoy. I know it's, for example, in this case, it's not the best meta when 6% of 50% of your fights will be against Paladin, because everyone plays Secret Paladin, because it's auto-run deck, basically. It plays itself. You just need to draw properly, pretty much. So I know it can be annoying, but Ben Broad in this video actually stated the obvious, because, for example, you know that he can't tell you if, "Oh, look, in a month I'll give you a surprise," because when the surprise will arrive, you're like, "Yeah, it's not a surprise, we knew about it, you told us." Yes. So, but it was something that was needed to be said, though. So I agree with the video.
Yeah, I agree too, but I think as you said, it was stating the obvious and it wasn't necessary, at least for me, maybe for somebody else.
Yeah,
So
exactly.
going on through the news, at this we have this bit of news where Blizzard buys Major League Gaming. So what this means for us? This means that, I mean, this was an unknown news until a couple of weeks later. I mean, this wasn't released immediately. This means that obviously Blizzard is quite investing in esports. It's actually Blizzard Activision. Sorry for, I mean, it's Blizzard Activision. Is it investing? Is it for esports? For this means for me, you, and us, it's all good news. I mean, that's what kind of sounds to me. And they've also bought personnel off ESPN. I know, like an ex-president or something like that, to work at their esports section. They've trademarked competitive for something regarding a future website or we don't know, a client for competitive Blizzard gaming or something like that. And it's good news for us that they're trying to invest in
It is
esports and
indeed.
stuff like that. I hope they kind of come out and create a hub where like all gaming can be united in one spot, which is a bit utopic,
Yes,
but
of
I hope
course.
something like that happens, or at least not for like at least like all major games can be in one place and make a new ESPN where everybody can just tune in and watch whatever they want. I mean, Twitch is already doing this, but
Yeah,
it's doing it
exactly.
more on an internet scale rather than like a 360 degrees scale.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing I hope as well. Like Blizzard, when Blizzard, they're not stupid. They're definitely not stupid. And when they move in a move like that, buying by MLG, it's definitely something big. So they definitely have something ready for us. Maybe it will not come this year. Maybe it will come 2017. We don't know. Doesn't really matter. Eventually, it will come. We seen already them experimenting with automatic tournaments in StarCraft 2. There is a mode in which you can enter in automatically generated tournaments just to try your mettle with your friends or whatnot. Like I think you can do with your friends also with just random people. Just like, yep, just queue me in a free tournament and just go in and play. So they said that they're looking into it as well for our certain other platform, other games as well. So probably eventually we'll get something in Arsenal as well that will be like the arena of constructed. Like imagine a tour that would be one of my dreams. Automatic tournaments, like you co
Tournament
costs
mode.
yeah tournament mode
You want
costs
tournament mode. Yeah, that's what everybody wants.
pretty much like costs 100 200 gold to enter. And there will be eight of you. Will be elimination, like best of three or whatever. Of course, everything will need a UI or like programs to run the numbers and whatnot, etc., etc. But best of three, like conquest, you can choose the options: conquest or last hero standing or whatever. And then the top four, they split the pie. They split the gold. Like the fourth gets 200 gold back. The first gets, I don't know, 1,000 gold, so that you can actually earn gold. You can still be free to play, but you can still earn money while free to playing. So money, I mean gold, of course.
Yeah, yeah, we definitely want tournament mode, something that Blizzard should hear. So, but as they said in the video, they're working on it. But talking more about the esports scene, the format changes and the money invested between last year and this year is something like, I don't know, I'm not going to say record breaking, but last year, Firebat got 250K. This year, the winner is going to get, I mean, the
150,
prize
yeah.
pot for the top eight, for
Yeah,
the prize
exactly.
pot for the top eight is 1 million. But it's not only that, there's like 1.9 million invested in the World Championship Series, where
Exactly.
300K will be giving out to each continent over three seasons. So
Yeah.
100K per each continent per season. One season is like, I think it's 4 months or
Yeah,
three and a half months, where at the
it's
end
pretty
of
much
the
like
seasons, there's
the
going to
season
be the,
spring,
yeah.
winter, summer, or what?
I
One
mean,
of each season.
jumping from 250K to 2 million really communicates to us this is an expanding scene, something that Blizzard is trying to capture, should have done since the beginning, like Riot does, like in
Yeah, exactly.
managing their own tournaments and stuff like that. Just for the last news, we have this pity algorithm,
See, this is
which,
more rumor
or
than the
you want to
news,
tell us
but
what?
yeah, it's pretty much basically someone analyzed all the data of all the packets opening that he could find, etc., etc., and he basically saw that there is like almost like a limit in which eventually you'll find the legendary, pretty much. Like in the recorded pack opening that he seen, I don't remember how many thousands and thousands of packets he's seen opening. He said that basically every 40 packets there will be that the biggest interval of not legendaries is 40 packets. After 39 packets, every time in all the after the 40th has been the legendary. So it looks like, and this of course is a rumor, Blizzard didn't confirm anything and is obviously silent on the matter. It's almost as after 40 packets there is a legendary guaranteed. It's not guaranteed, of course, but like the numbers looks like the longest interval ever that has been without legendary is like 39 packets, so it should be. but it could be that one card out of 40 packets will be legendary, at least. So, and I think it was 10 for epics, like 10 packets the most without epics. So it looks like we can be lucky. Like, well, it's not about luck as well, but there is a kind of system that protects you from being eternally unlucky.
Yeah, that's what it's called, pity, as in the game takes...
Exactly.
You know,
look man, pity. You haven't got a legendary in a while. Get one.
Yeah, I didn't coin the term. I mean, somebody else exactly. did, but it explains itself.
Yeah, so basically after this pity algorithm, or this poor man algorithm, as I call it, I think we can close here the first podcast of Heartward, the 360 Degrees Hearthstone podcast. So thank you for listening to us, and let us know if you want more, if you'd like something different in the podcast. So if you have any requests, just let us know. And I'll say goodbye from Francesco, also known as Royamel. And
thank you, everybody. Goodbye from Siddhartha. You can also contact us on info.hearthworld@gmail.com. Let me say that again. info.hearthworld@gmail.com.
Yep.
And throw us some questions, topics to talk about. I mean, any material is welcome. And thanks again for having the patience of listening our first episode. And I'm kind of new to this, so please forgive me for any mistakes or something
like
that.
But
I hope, I mean, forgive us. But I hope you enjoyed 1 hour of us talking about Hearthstone, and I hope this was interesting for you. So thank you for everything, and see you on next record.
Bye bye. Next episode. Bye bye.